This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Everyone knows my guest as Roseanne's TV husband. My guest is John Goodman. During his breaks from Roseanne, he makes movies. His latest is a remake of Born Yesterday, which opened today. He also starred in Matinee as a horror movie impresario. He played a devilish salesman in Barton Fink. He played Babe Ruth in The Babe. He was Al Pacino's partner in Sea of Love and Sally Field's husband in Punchline. I asked him about his audition for Roseanne. What was he told about his character, Dan Connor?
Wow. They laid it real simple. Didn't really sketch it in much. Blue collar. I think they wanted somebody that could stand up to her. Whatever that means. Hire a redwood tree.
Did you think the series would catch on?
I had no idea. I'd never really done much television before. I tell people that I just read with Roseanne Barr at the time, and everybody was very interested in it. And then when we did the pilot, I'd tell people about it, and they thought, oh, yeah, well, we can't wait to see that, because she was pretty hot. And it worked out. But I have no way of knowing these things. It was pretty much another job. I wanted to take it to get off the road for a while because I've been living out of a suitcase.
What were you doing?
Doing films. I'd go from city to city, just an itinerant actor. But I'd always pick up a new movie, and then I'd go to a new location, a new hotel, new Gideon Bible.
And you got tired of that?
Yeah, it got old.
What's it like to have a TV family? You know, all of us who grew up watching TV have always compared our families with the families that we watched on TV. Now, so now you have a TV family.
Yes, I do. I guess they're pretty much better paid than most families. I never really thought of them that much as a family, in as much as, you know, you think of a cast that you work with as family sometimes. Mm-hmm. But that's about the extent of it.
Who were the TV families that you really liked when you were young watching television?
I loved the Cleavers. I think it ran on Saturday night in St. Louis and on ABC, and I couldn't wait to see them. I just loved Beaver, because he just seemed so real. He'd talk about the same things that we talked about. I think the writers had something going there. And then everybody knew an Eddie Haskell.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody knew somebody like Beaver's older brother. And I grew up without a dad, so Ward was a little surreal anyway. But I dug them.
Did you ever?
I never really quite got... Father knows best.
Not having a father when you were growing up, did you assume that real fathers were like Ward Cleaver and...
Nah, I seen the guys next door. Hell, I knew what they were like. They were, for the most part, guys like Dan Connor.
Is there a laugh track on Roseanne?
No, there's a genuine studio audience there. They hype them up. They get them all pumped up on steroids and... A comedian comes out and gets everybody all jacked up, and they're pretty raring to go. You know what? They might sweeten it sometimes. I can't really say that honestly because I don't know. But the live audiences that are there are usually pretty good.
Does it make it like theater?
Yeah, it was tricky when I first started doing it because I was playing it like it was theater. I was playing to the audience instead of the cameras, and it's kind of a stupid thing to do.
I could see the temptation, though, because it's the audience that's giving you the reaction, not the camera.
Yeah, well, no, because the audience is watching video monitors. So you have to time things. You can't time things like you would normally. You have to time things to what the audience is watching, and you don't know half the time if they're watching you or if they're watching the monitor.
Huh.
So you just have to go with where the red light is.
Right. How was your life changed by people seeing you as Dan Connor, the character from Roseanne?
Well, I lost my anonymity for the most part, so it's a little difficult going places.
Do you think people are more presumptuous about approaching you when they know you from TV as opposed to movies? Because you're at home with them.
Yeah, I've always felt that. I talk to people who do movies exclusively, and when you come into somebody's house, they're more familiar with you.
So do they try to get familiar with you when they run into you at a restaurant?
Oh, yeah, I'm like everybody's best friend. I get a lot of headlocks and back slaps and stuff like that. For the most part, I mean, people really mean well. They just they don't realize that it can be a little off-putting sometimes.
If you're a self-conscious person, does it make it even worse?
Yeah, and how. I mean, I got buddies that love it. They thrive on it. They love being recognized. I always see somebody looking at me and a little too long, I assume my fly's open.
You know, I'm thinking about how differently you handle fame from, say, Roseanne and Tom Arnold. And they've used fame to make their lives into performance pieces in a way.
Yeah, that's human life is a performance piece. That's very interesting. Now, Rose likes it, and I'm uncomfortable with it.
Does that make for any tension around the set about how to use the fame of the people on the show? I mean, for instance, Roseanne and Tom get into these controversies all the time, whether it's about incest or Julia Louis-Dreyfus's parking spot. And do you try to stay clear of all of that?
You betcha. I'm not very confrontational. I'd just as soon not get into anything, just try to let things go along as they will. So there's no tension on the set, though. I mean, I just try to stay out of things.
Is it easy to stay out of it?
You bet.
My guest is John Goodman. He stars in the new movie Born Yesterday. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. My guest is John Goodman. Can we talk about your early life a little bit?
Sure.
Okay, you were born in St. Louis in 1952. Your father died before your second birthday, so your mother supported the family. Were you the only one of your friends from a single-parent family when you were growing up?
Yeah, actually, I believe I was. I never really thought about that, but yeah, everybody else had two parents.
Did that make you feel very different?
It did. I didn't dwell on it, but it was something that was at the back of my mind that I was aware of all the time. But it was, I to be honest, I wouldn't know what it would be like to grow up with a father. So I don't, you know, it was neither better nor worse. It was just different.
What did your mother do to make a living?
She would, she took in ironing sometimes. She had what was the equivalent of a daycare center now. They called it babysitting back then. But parents would go to work, and they'd drop their kids off at the house. So we played. I mean, it must have been rough on Mom, but we played a lot, had a lot of fun. And then she was a clerk at a drugstore, and she worked at a barbecue joint when I was in high school, so I could steal her tips.
Were you watching a lot of movies, TV, listening to a lot of music when you were young?
At that age, the TV would keep breaking, so I read a lot. But, we'd go to the Crest show on matinee days and see stuff, see movies. But, I watched a little bit of television.
You just starred in the movie Matinee. Did you ever see any of the William Castle movies?
I sure did. I saw 13 Ghosts. I really enjoyed the hell out of that with the 3D glasses that you had to put on at certain times during the movie so you could see the ghosts come out of the screen and stuff. It was neat.
Did you save the glasses?
No, but who was I talking to? The guy from Entertainment Tonight, Leonard Maltin, has got his 13 ghost glasses.
So you said you read a lot of books. What kind of books would you read?
Good stuff, you know, for the most part, stuff you're supposed to read, like Stevenson and Mark Twain. And then when I got in like seventh and eighth grade, I turned into a little James Bond nerd. I'd go and I'd go and get these paperbacks. I don't know where the hell I got the money from, and then read them. I turned into quite the little geek.
What was geeky about reading James Bond, though? Those weren't geeky books.
What a cool guy.
Yeah, well, I read just about all of them, I think.
I was like a chubby 11-year-old with broken glasses, you know, and dirty pants, and just, you know, picture myself on the Riviera chain smoking Galois.
You know what I remember?
Talking to some other 7th grade girl. Suave.
Well, one thing that I'll always remember from the James Bond books is his comma of black hair.
Oh, his comma of black hair that fell down over his right eye.
Yeah.
His tiger-sinewed body.
There were some descriptions that would be exactly the same, I think, in every book.
Yeah, and they fit me pretty damn well at the time, I think.
So what were the big turning points in your pre-acting life?
I think a lot of it revolved around athletics. I had a cousin that played football at Missouri University when I was in 4th grade, and the sun rose and set on him, and that's what I wanted to do. So I play football a lot, whenever I could, and when I got into high school, that's what I geared everything towards, was high school football. And I was terrible. I mean, I wasn't very good. I was slow, lazy, but the fact that I was on a team and wearing a uniform, I think made it. I was a football player.
So it made it easier to get dates?
Well, no. I mean, let's not say that. I was very, very shy, very backwards. I didn't get my first date until I was 16 years old, and it was a fix-up job. And halfway there to the girl's house, I begged my friend to stop the car, let me out. I've got to sty anything, you know. I've got to get out of this. But I went through with it, and then... I didn't have a girlfriend until I was in college, really.
Because you were shy?
Yeah, pathologically.
So even the uniform didn't help that, huh?
No, I kind of dwelt in my own fantasy world, I guess. But I had really bad crushes on girls, you know, and I never had the guts to follow through on it. I wasn't a stalker or anything. But.
There is this real connection between performers and shyness, and I think a lot of people find it hard to understand how you could be so big on stage.
I was reading an article on Peter Fonda talking about his father. He said that his father, he finally discovered that he wasn't angry at him. He just was extremely shy. And I thought that was fascinating.
But I bet you were the kind of shy person who, when you felt really comfortable, could be very extroverted.
Oh, very much so. At parties, when things were going a little too slowly for my speed, I'd just get up and start jumping around like a madman, just grabbing things and improvising and goofing around, getting everybody going. And I just thrived on that.
Do you remember?
But that's, I guess, how I expressed myself to girls, which at that time in your life is the big thing you're trying to impress.
Right. Do you remember the very first time you got drunk?
Wow. Yeah, I sure do. I was in, I stayed over, and we went out, we snuck out. I was supposed to be staying over at somebody's house. We snuck out, we went up to a driving range and took all the golf balls from the driving range and threw them into the swimming pool next door. And somebody had a bottle of rum, and God, I must have drank half a bottle of rum. And I was still going the next morning. I slept. Woke up, didn't know where I was, went over to a friend of mine's house, and I was still about half looped. Not pretty.
Did you pattern any of your behavior on having watched a lot of movies where people got drunk and did crazy things?
No. No, this was, it was all new to me. I mean, I didn't have a red nose and a broken top hat and hang out on a lamppost and go hick or anything. I have little bubbles come out of my mouth.
So when you went to college, were you on the football team?
No, I wasn't. I went down. I did a year at a junior college because I didn't have any money. And I had a couple of buddies playing football at Southwest Missouri State. So I thought, well, I'll get a federal grant and try to go down there and walk on the football team, which means you go on without a scholarship. You just try out, and they either take you or they don't. Well, I got down there. I was ineligible. And by the time I was eligible for football, I was too involved in the theater department.
Why were you ineligible for football?
So I didn't take, I never had to take an SAT or something for some reason. And if I know me, my grades were probably not up to snuff.
So since,
and then I got involved in theater through kind of a roundabout way, and that was it. That was love at first sight.
What kind of roles were you playing in college?
Everything. Playing a lot of what they call character roles. And then I lost 65 pounds. Then I started playing, romantic leads and stuff. Then I learned how to sing, doing a lot of leads in musicals.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting. I'm glad I did that because I got a chance to play leading men like character men. And I think I learned a little bit something from that.
Okay, and you mentioned that you started to sing when you were in college in the theater department?
Right? Yeah. I got a role, came up of in the Fantastics, and I had never sung before, so I took a few lessons and auditioned for it, and I got the role.
So you had to sing Try to Remember?
Yeah, dig that. So I used that for an audition song for years after that. But it was something I'd never experienced before. It was acting. It's like playing Shakespeare, a heightened realism, very stylized acting. That's the way I always thought of it.
Well, I just happen to have one of your singing moments at the end of the movie True Stories, David Byrne's movie. You sing a song, and you sing it really well. I think the song is written by David Byrne.
Yeah.
But we've got that queued up. I want to play that. Oh, because it sounds so good. So we're going to play some of that, and then we'll talk a little bit more about singing. Here we go.
In 1950, when I was born, Papa couldn't afford to buy us much. He said, "Be proud of what you are. There's something special about people."
That's John Goodman singing from the movie True Stories. Is that the same voice that you used for Try to Remember?
No. Different character, different voice. That used to be on the flip side of a Talking Heads single in a bar I frequented on the west side of Manhattan. And people had put that on to razz me every once in a while. Lordy.
Now, I know when you first went to New York, you got there with a $1,000 loan from your brother.
Yeah.
Did you ever pay him back?
He'd been saving up to just for money in case I wanted to go to grad school or something, and he gave it to me the night I graduated college.
Gee, what a really nice gift.
Yeah, it was. It got me through, about the first 3 or 4 months in New York until I could get some more income.
What did you do your first week in New York?
I was scared. I was terrified. I remember coming out of Penn Station and having the taxi driver take me up to 92nd Broadway where I was staying, and I remember tipping the taxi driver like $5 so I wouldn't get a beating or something, and just looking around and then going out and hitting all the restaurants and bars looking for a waiter's job, and I was just scared. I really wanted to go back to St. Louis and give it up.
Why didn't you?
I didn't want to be humiliated. I have a good, strong sense of embarrassment, so that kept me there. And plus, I really wanted to work. I didn't know. I really had no idea whether I could do it or not. And there was just something that hole needed to be filled.
This, I'm only bringing this up because in the second part of our show today, we're interviewing a psychiatrist whose specialty is manic depression. And she's written a book about the connection between the artistic temperament and manic depression. And that's gotten me thinking about mood a lot. So I'm wondering if moods ever enhance or get in the way of a performance, or if you can get out of your mood completely to do the mood that's called for in the part.
When I've found myself coming into the theater or going into a scene extremely angry about something, and for some reason that's always blown away everything. I don't care who's sitting in the audience. I don't care who's doing what. And it really peps you up. And that, for some reason, that seemed to work for me.
Anger.
Yeah. Really popping through things. I mean, it doesn't happen all the time, but I've just noticed that when I'm extremely angry about something, it just, all the other stuff gets blown to the side, and I just pull through and do what I want to do.
You know, you were talking before about how fame can really get in the way, and you can't just walk down the street without people staring or fussing. So where do you go? I mean, like, when you're famous and everybody recognizes you, does that mean that you have to go to other places where lots of famous people hang out? So that,
well, I go in Los Angeles. It's not that big of a deal. I go to get away. I have a house in Louisiana next to my in-laws, and nobody really cares there.
Mm-hmm.
Not that big a deal. And there's certain parts of St. Louis to when I go home, just to see my buddies and stuff, to get away to.
Do you get into this awful bind, though, where on the one hand you want to be away from people who know you and want to talk about your show and stuff, but on the other hand you resent it just a little bit when people don't care who you are?
No, I really like it when people don't know who I am.
Uh-huh.
Or if they just don't care.
Right.
I prefer that. No, I there's no resentment. I thought about that because it's kind of a funny situation. But it's not applicable in this case.
Well, John Goodman, I thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
John Goodman stars in the new movie Born Yesterday, and of course you can see him every week on Roseanne. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.